We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast, brought to you by WinBet. I'm your host, James Anderson, and we've been talking a lot of prospects, a lot of dynasty on the show so far this offseason, but I felt like with the calendar turning to December, now is a great time to dive in a little bit on some redraft talk. And I invited on a couple of the biggest degenerates, draft fiends that I know, John Fish, Zach Waxman. I reached out to both these guys a few weeks ago before the episode with Eric Cross to get some ADP from them because I knew that they would know where guys like Bobby Witt were going, even though that ADP wasn't live yet because I knew that they were knee-deep in drafts already. John, Zach, really appreciate you taking the time to come on.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Appreciate it, James.
So how many drafts have each of you done so far, and how many leagues do you usually play in per year?
I'm in my 11th draft right now. I'll probably do somewhere in the mid-30s, probably finish up around there.
Yeah, I'm pretty close to that. I've done 650s and six, or done or in the process of six DCs, so it's 12 right nice. Now.
So you guys are like neck and neck.
Pretty
how
close,
many do
yeah.
You usually, how many do you usually do, Zach?
Well, last year I really stepped up my game in the NFBC. Usually it's like, I'd say 60.
Yeah. So that's awesome. I kind of wish that I could just do that. But I haven't done a single draft so far.
I don't know if you do.
Well, I've got the itch. I've been seeing closers going in the third round and stuff, which kind of takes that itch away a little bit. But I definitely have the itch to get in there. The pros and the cons, I think, of drafting early versus drafting late are very obvious. But do you guys have a preference at all in terms of early versus late? John, start with you.
I mean, I like both pretty equal, actually. If I was only doing a few leagues, though, I would definitely prefer closer to the season. But yeah, I love getting going early. November is like some of my favorite time to draft just because there's no ADP. And if there is, it's very little. You can get some major steals. So kind of like Zach and I were talking over the last couple of weeks about Corey Knebel, and I was able to get him in the 28th round in my last draft, and then he just signed with the Phillies today, and now he's going the 18th round. So
he just went 10 round bump pre 200 in one of my drafts. So yeah, I'm the same way. I'm like, I always want to hunt for the bargains, and then Knebel is actually one of those guys that I was looking for. I'm like, I got to join two or three more drafts to get him before he signs. And I'm in these drafts. I'm still in the early rounds, and he signs already. I'm like, okay, why did I join these drafts? Because he was actually the one guy I was trying to target. But now you're not going to get you're not going to get a discount on him anymore.
Zach, do you have any idea if you're early? Because I mean, you did enough where there's a large sample last year. Like, do you have any idea if your early ones or your closer to the season ones did better?
Oh, 100%. The closer to the season ones did better. I think particularly because all the early ones were mainly drafting holds, and that was not my strong suit last year. Last year, my strong suit was the the Fab Leagues where I did well. The Draft Champions, I didn't do so well. So I've learned from a lot of, I've watched and I've learned from a lot of the best players like John. I think John did really well in these Draft Champions, and you got to change it up. So yeah, I know definitely the later drafts were better to me last year, but hoping to change that up this year.
So my pre-draft process has kind of evolved over the years. I used to, you know, use like a software and make like projections of guys and kind of do that throughout November and December and sort of use that as a cheat sheet. But then I switched it up last year and kind of tried the Casey Cha thing of basically, you know, eliminating, you know, a good chunk of the player pool and just only going after certain guys. But I mean, that takes a lot of work to put that draft board together. What's your guys' pre-draft process like when you are starting so early? Because I mean, it obviously, you know, if you're doing a ton of research, that can take a lot of time, but obviously you guys are jumping right into these things in November. So what's your guys' pre-draft process this early in the drafting season? And then how does that process maybe change as we get closer to opening day?
I think the first thing that I think about, and it's not maybe it's not something I put on paper, but I want to think about what do I think ADP will look like, because there is no ADP. So I sort of have this visual of the map in my mind, and I said, okay, where do I think closers are going to go? How deep are each position? What positions am I willing to wait on? Sort of get a feeling, like, for example, first base. Like, I think, like, Rhys Hoskins, CJ Krohn, LeMahieu, they're probably going to go in the early 100s. Is that going to dictate what I'm going to do early in the draft? And knowing closers are going to get pushed up, you know, certain other position players, like, say, Austin Riley, are going to get shifted to a certain spot. So that's the first thing I do.
Yeah, I'm very similar. Like, I look at position tiers. I just kind of make my own little tier of all the positions. I just see how many I like, first of all, how many players I'm willing to take at that position. And then, you know, try to guess where I think that they're going to land. And third base has been clear that it's the easiest. I think it's pretty much everybody agrees that it's the shallowest position.
Yeah, it sucks.
Yeah. I noticed that for sure. I mentioned that on a recent pod. I'm doing a kind of a dynasty mock draft right now, and that definitely stood out. You know, third base, like, you have kind of those elite guys that go in the first couple rounds, and then after that, it really kind of thins out. And as you alluded to, Zach, first base, kind of the opposite. So that's interesting. Do you guys kind of use these early drafts? Like, are you sort of almost prepping mid-draft with some of these, especially like your first handful where you're kind of doing a slow draft, you're on the clock, and you kind of are weighing a bunch of players and kind of letting things flush out that way?
Yeah, for sure. I generally have a good idea of like what my strategy is, what I try to accomplish in the first 5 to 10 rounds, and I'm pretty comfortable through 15 to 20 rounds. And then after that is kind of where, you know, I'll take a little extra time while I'm on the clock with my pick and try to look at my previous draft, see where certain guys went, even though it's so different right now in those rounds 20 through 50.
We actually did a fast draft. Me and John were in the same one. First fast draft of the season, a 12 team league. And yeah, like, some of these players, there's still no ADP in the draft rooms in the NFBC. So some of these players are buried. I'm not going to mention names, but some of them are buried. So you sort of play the game of chicken in your own mind. Like, I know they're buried. Everyone else here drafting right now is smart as well. They know it. So it's sort of like, I don't know. So it's a lot of psychology involved, I think.
How do you guys have sort of a, I mean, are you more willing to get as close to like hitting that other car as you need to, or, you know, does it depend on the player, whether you're just willing to say like, look, I value this guy as a seventh round pick. I know most people maybe value him in like the 11th round, but the worst thing that could happen is I get cute with it and miss out. Are you guys more likely to just get your guy or get close to that chicken?
I'll play a little chicken at the beginning of the draft season just because I know I have a lot of opportunities to still get, you know, whoever that player is. So I'll play a little bit of chicken in the early draft season.
Yeah, me too. Just because I know that's the one advantage to doing a lot of drafts is you know that volume is on your side. So I like a player. And if I used to play in one league and I'm like, I love this player. I need to get him. And I would reach. And then here, and then if I didn't get him, it would be devastating, right? This is the player I wanted for the whole year. And now I'm in like 60 leagues. So if I don't get that player, if I can miss that player 40 times and I still have a really good exposure to him. So it really helps you not reach and draft smarter. So like you draft with your head, not with your heart, I guess.
Zach, a quick aside, you mentioned like 60 plus leagues last year. How much time, you know, and I bet a bunch of those were DCs, but how much time were you spending on an average Sunday night and how much time on an average Monday morning, Monday early afternoon, getting all those lineups ready?
Right. So 13 of them were fab leagues. So that wasn't like really bad on the Sunday. I think John might've been similar to me in that respect. I had that down to about 3 or 4 hours at the most on a Sunday night. And I would do it all like last minute because I didn't want to keep changing it. So Sunday night was 3 or 4 hours of fab. And then like Monday, and then you also think about Tuesday because not all the games run Monday. Then you have Friday, right. Sometimes there's rain out. So it does like leak into, it's, you got to look at it Monday, Tuesday, Friday, and Saturday basically. So those would range from, it would be throughout the day, maybe on Monday, it would be like an hour and a half to go through all my lineups. And a lot of them were DCs and all my players were injured anyway. So some of those DCs literally took 5 seconds to set.
Right.
I had 9 fab leagues. So throughout the course of the whole week, if I see something, a guy that I like, I'll go to all those leagues, put them over, and then just throughout the week, just keep reassessing. And then Sunday, obviously, is the when it kind of comes down to crunch time. Usually it's the last couple hours before lock that I'll make adjustments and, you know, and whatnot. As far as kind of like what Zach said with the DCs, the first couple months of the season, it takes a little bit longer because you got a lot more options.
Right.
By the time you get to the middle stages towards the end, you have so many players injured, you kind of don't have a choice who you can't just play matchups anymore. That's why it's so important to build such good depth in those DCs.
Zach, I saw you tweeting about this the other day. I think it was that there was a draft board and you mentioned people are following the steamer projections fairly closely. Do you guys sort of notice that in those first drafts right after the steamer gets released? And have you noticed any specific examples of guys that have gone way in one direction or the other since that big projection system did get released?
Well, you get to know your opponents pretty well in the NFBC. It's a lot of the usual suspects like John. And you know, you get the feeling of who are slaves to these projections and who are more drafting based on gut or their own systems. Right. There's certain players that, you know, that are going to move up and going to move up draft boards. An example of that guy last year that I remember was Jean Segura. He was a guy that wasn't going very high. Then his steamer projections came out and then all of a sudden, like, people saw that and like, this guy's like going in the 200s, but he's like, what, like a $12 player they had him at. So like that was an example last year. This year, it's probably going to be Verlander because a lot of people use those projections and they don't. And I don't know, maybe I'm just oversimplifying and maybe I'm not giving people enough credit, but like, see Verlander's projections and you're not going to factor in all the other constraints, like the intangibles, right? But he's got a really, really favorable steamer projection. So like the first draft that we did, me and John, where did he go? Like close to 200? I think. And now you're seeing him like go, like there's one outlier where he went super high, but he's going like maybe in the early 100s now. So he's a guy you're going to see move up.
Yeah, and not just Steamer too, just like any kind of report about, oh, he threw a bullpen today and he came out fine. Okay, so people take that as like, oh, he's fine, he's good to go. Like, let's move him up. As far as Steamer, I haven't really noticed any too much change from Steamer. Just more so things like that, like the report from Verlander. I think they said he hit 97 or something. So people think
really? I didn't hear about that. One thing I'll mention is I was talking to John. We were chatting today with me and John and some other people, and I was looking at Steamer, just trying to I filter through it and just look at some sort of like trends and stuff like that. And I said you're probably gonna know what I'm gonna say. There was 18 players in Steamer that had a projected for 20 home runs, 10 stolen bases, and over 260 average in 160 combined runs and RBIs. So of those 18 players, I think 16 of them were consensus top five round picks. Another guy was Jorge Polanco, who's pretty close. And there's another guy that's going outside of round 10. John knows the answer. James, do you have any guess at who it is?
Going outside of round 10.
And I'll give you a hint. This guy was a guy that is going a lot higher last year, and his price is a lot more affordable. And I'm noticing some sharp players on him this year that weren't on him last year.
It did take me three guesses to finally
get it. So it's 20 homers, 10 steals is the
projected Steamer projection. Sorry. It's 20 home runs, 10 stolen bases. So an 80-80. So, well, not necessarily 80-80, but 160 combined runs and RBIs and a 260 batting average. There's 18 of them in Steamer. And basically 16 or 17 were going as you'd expect. And there's a player going just outside the 10th round in 15 teamers.
Gosh, I'm gonna kill myself.
Even after seeing it, I don't know if I like it, but like I don't like to be a slave to projections. I'm not really a projection guy.
Oh, this is great podcasting. I'm gonna kick myself. But why don't you just give it to me?
Gleyber Torres.
Oh, that's so stupid. Steamer, like does Steamer know that the ball was juiced in 2019? Because like that to me is like Gleyber Torres is maybe the poster child for the juiced ball just completely inflating his reputation in 2019, and he's come nowhere near that power figure. Like I think he's more likely to get to the 10 steals than the 20 homers. But I don't know.
That's fair. Yeah, I don't know what to make of that. I just found it interesting.
Yeah, I was like, this is gonna be some guy that I'm on. And then you said Gleyber Torres. I was like, no, never mind. <it's not. laughs> Okay, so I thought this would be fun. I'm sure you guys have some really great starts to drafts, especially early, no ADP. But I want you to pick your favorite start to a draft so far. So like first four, five, six picks or so. John, let's start with you.
I would probably say that my favorite start to a draft so far is probably the draft that I'm currently in. Yeah, I got so my general draft strategy is I like aces and bases early. So I want aces and I want stolen bases early. I feel like power is something you can always get in the middle and late rounds of drafts. So my favorite start is the draft I'm currently in. I started Corbin Burns from pick 8. Then went Starling Marte in the second. Giolito in the third. So I got my two aces. Trevor Story in the fourth. I think he's almost an auto pick. I think he's got the power and the speed. I think he kind of mailed it in at the second after the deadline last year. So, and then I got Eloy Jimenez in the fifth. I think he is essentially the new JD Martinez with the elite four categories. And then I got my staple who I seem to be getting everywhere. And that's Jose Altuve in the sixth.
Nice. Yeah. I love that. Would you take Story over, how do you rank Story, Tim Anderson, and Francisco Lindor?
That's a good question. I would probably go Tim Anderson.
And Story, he was gone probably.
And then Lindor. Yeah, Tim Anderson went and Tim Anderson went in the third round at pick 39.
Yeah,
and Story at 53, 54.
Yeah, that's awesome. We'll talk about Eli in a little bit here, but yeah, I love where he's going right now. Zach, what about you? What's your favorite start so far?
I was looking at that, and it was probably the first draft that I did, and that was with I partnered with Graham. You can find him at Shrimp Boat Captain. I don't know if you know who I'm talking about, James. But we started with Vlad at pick 9. John was in this draft as well. It was the first draft that I did on Fantrax. We even ported over to the NFBC. So I started Vlad, or we started Vlad. And then we're chasing steals after that. And then we did get Albies in round 2. Gausman in round 3, which is okay, I guess. And then I really liked Teoscar in round 4 and Tyler O'Neill in round 5. And then Chapman as our closer in round 6. I know I'll cheat a little bit and head into round 7 because it's Logan Webb, and I'll cheat and go into round 7 because he's not usually a round 7 guy anymore. So that's probably the best start that I've had.
Is that a 12 or 15?
That's a 15.
15. So Chapman in the 6 and a 15, huh? That seems
I've seen that a few times, I think. It's not frequent. Actually, the first two drafts that we did, I got Chapman in both those drafts in the 6th round, I think.
Nice.
Yeah, Chapman went in the 6th in my current DC as well.
I don't know what it is. People don't like him as much anymore. I think they're just going to run him out. Like, his last year on the contract, like, it's going to take a lot for him to lose that job.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking for saves. Like, I don't care how old a guy is or you know, I mean, I think he's just as good a bet as any to get you 30 saves. But speaking of saves, I mentioned I've been kind of scared off, or at least, you know, a few weeks ago I was seeing these boards where, you know, you had like Hendricks and Hader going third round and stuff. That just doesn't seem fun at all. And so I did not really have the itch that much when I started seeing those boards. But what have your guys' approaches been to save so far this year? Obviously, I mean, this will all be changing, you know, as guys sign, as guys get hurt, everything like that. But do you have sort of a general approach, or has it just varied, and are you just looking at trying to find value?
Yeah, so for me, I generally like to get one of the good closers early. I don't like where Hendricks and Hader are going right now. That's just a little bit too early for me. I think round 4, round 5 is a really good spot to hammer, you know, Iglesias or Edwin Diaz. I think those guys are fantastic. I think they have this, you know, the safe role. They got high strikeouts, good ratios. They're on teams where they should get a lot of saves. I think they're as safe as they come. So I would rather go for someone like that. If I do miss out on those two, which I have quite a bit, actually, a lot more than I'd like. I've been getting some Jordan Romano in the 7th. I'm a little bit nervous about it. I think he has the role right now, but I just hope that they don't try to add, you know, somebody else, which who knows, they might, and that could be a terrible pick. But yeah, if he's got the role, I think he's fantastic value in the 7th.
Yeah, I want to come out with at least one or two out of the first, in the first 7 or 8 rounds, wherever that tier ends, which I think, John, you're saying Romano, that's sort of like where the tier ended. Now it's shifted a bit because we've got a little bit more clarity, but I do want at least one or preferably two of those big closers, because it's just about, you want to get the role right now. Like even Romano, and like you've seen Giovanni Gallegos go really early in some of these drafts. My whole strategy right now with closures is I just want to get, I'm paying the price for the security for that role. I don't want to pay for the price for somebody that's good, but it's a maybe role, like a Gallegos, or like even like a Romano is a little bit like that, but like, yeah, like, but a Gallegos is like a perfect example of that. I'm not gonna, like, I want to pay up for saves, but I want to pay up for certainty. That's what I'm paying for. I'm paying for the certainty. and especially in the fab leagues where like you can look at the Steamer projections and you can assign $20 worth of auction value or whatever to those saves, but there's way more intrinsic value in those closers taking them this early because it's so difficult to find the closers on the waiver wire or even closers later in these 50 round drafts. It's the fab that you're going to spend, and it's not only the fab you're going to spend, but it's piecing together what you get in like someone like a Hendricks later. You're going to need two roster spots to do that. You're going to need like a Scott Barlow plus some other guy you're going to find somewhere else. So there's a lot of things that you know that aren't considered in that number value you see on FanDrafts, I think.
Yeah, I mean the draft and hold, but by far my biggest weakness over the past like few years in draft and holds has been getting enough saves in the draft. And so I think I've even considered like in the Tout Wars draft and hold I'm in, like I accidentally punted saves last year and still almost won the league. And now I think I am just going to full out punt saves in that draft and hold and just see if I can pull it off. That's obviously a lot easier to say in like a bragging rights league like that one. But in a cash draft and hold type of league and where I don't want to punt, I think paying up, especially this time of year. I mean, like I'd be even with Jordan Romano, like you said, Fish, I'd be kind of worried because man, there's like 4 months ahead of us still here where a lot could go wrong with that one.
Yeah.
There's a lot of dominoes that need to fall still.
Right.
But they're falling, like Melanson and Iglesias fell. So now you're not as worried. That helps Gallegos quite a bit actually, because those are the two of the ones that he was susceptible to.
So you guys have both done around a dozen drafts, or at least you're in your 11th or 12th draft. Are there any prospects? I'll let you each like pick one if you have one, hitter or pitcher, who you've got multiple shares of already.
I don't think I have any multiple shares of prospects. I was burned a little bit last year by them, so and I know we should be a little more confident in their ability to perform this year since they're coming off a full minor league season, unlike last year. But yeah, I love Bobby Witt, but he's just going too early for me. Joe Adell, I mean, I guess he was up a little bit last year. He's a target for me. I just haven't gotten any, that many shares of him yet.
What about you, Zach?
Yeah, I'm trying to stay away from prospects. I think that was one of my biggest kryptonites last year. I just I grew up playing dynasty leagues and I'm a big dynasty guy, and getting into these NFBC, you really have to change gears. So that was one of the things, and especially in these DCs. So that was one of the things I learned and one of the things I'm hoping to do better. But to answer your question, I do have a couple prospects that I have a lot of shares of. I don't know if I want to say all of them.
That's all right.
But I'm looking at my player shares page right now, and I'm looking at like one of the guys that I can say that I do have a lot of, and that's I'll go Bailey Falter. Is he still a prospect, I guess?
Ooh, not via innings. He is via days on the active roster.
Okay, that's sort of cheating.
That's a good you're not divulging state secrets necessarily with Bailey Falter.
He's after round 40, he's between round 40 and 50. He's a guy that I've got a couple times. I don't think anyone really is on him.
Was talking to someone was asking me about him on Twitter a couple weeks ago about like whether he's a starter or reliever, and I said that I think I might like him more as a starter than the Phillies do. So I kind of hope that they give him a shot, but just didn't seem like that was something they were all that into last year. But I guess, I mean, we'll see. They'll deal with injuries, and hopefully he looks good during spring training. I asked that question. I wasn't even expecting. I was expecting at least one of you to give me the answer John gave, because that is just a really good way to get better at redraft, especially if you are coming from playing Dynasty or you're just really into staying up on prospects. And the draft champions as well, like a draft and hold. Like, I think a lot of people just think, well, this is a great way for me to, like, I'll get like 8 prospects out of my 50 picks and I can stash them. And then when they're up, I plug them in. I just, in my experience, you're just better off getting guys who are going to be on the big league roster all season. And, you know, you can get upside without going after prospects. There's plenty of old guys who turn in much better seasons than people.
Yeah, it's odd in these draft and holds. And I don't know, like, now that I have an opportunity to talk to both of you face to face, I want to ask you, like, what do you think about like a guy like Josh Jung and like even Torkelson, like those infielders, unproven completely. They're going like in the 200s. And then you have Carter Kibum, who's shown that he can suck, and he's like going close to 500, but he still had the same prospect pedigree. And like, you've seen post hype guys come along, and like, I don't know much. I don't claim to know as much as you do about, I guess, like, whether or not Carter Keaton actually sucks or not. But I find like the post hype guys are like, at least they're going to play. Like, find a post hype guy that's going to play and take that guy over somebody that might be up in May or June. Right.
Yeah. You know, the Key Boom example is tough for me just because like I actually was never that high on him. So like I don't like Torkelson that much for redraft. I do kind of like Young a little bit, but I mean, I've got those guys in my top 10. I think Kibu might have been just inside my top 20 at one point, but never top 10. So
so how about this example? How about Julio Rodriguez often going ahead of Joe Adell?
Yeah, I don't really want either of those guys. Rodriguez is just, you know, it's one of those where the people there's like this maybe 10% chance, 15% chance that the people who are taking Rodriguez inside the top 300 will be rewarded. And then they'll feel great. And everyone who just stayed away is going to be pissed they didn't get in on it. But I think that's a pretty big leap to take him inside the top 300 when there's a very real chance that he's not up before June. I think that's too rich. And then Adell, like, you know, if I thought Adell had 30 steal upside, I'd be in on him at this discount, but I just don't see that type of stolen base upside there with him just based on his track record. But Fish, do you see it differently?
I really don't know what to expect from him, to be honest with you. This is kind of a shot in the dark. Hoping he can bust out. It's not like I'm overly confident in him or anything. I think I have one share, so
yeah. I mean, he's super talented, so that could pay off too. But I mean, Jung is one of the guys where I'm kind of wrestling with whether I like the price or not, and Adley, to maybe a lesser extent, I haven't really decided whether or not I want to get in at the price. But I think at least with Young and Adley, you can feel pretty good, I think, about them being up in late April. But then in a draft and hold, like with Adley at catcher, it gets kind of tempting because it's like, even if you aren't getting anything from him for a month, you know, you can maybe make that all up in those next 5 months. But
I almost don't even consider him like a prospect like the other prospects in, for these draft and holds because of the reason you just noted.
Right. Just because of how low the bar is for him to finish as a top 10 catcher.
Yeah.
What about Bruan from the Rays?
Yeah, I'm wondering if you'll see him go. Have you guys done any drafts where he's gone since the Wendell thing?
We have. We're in the middle of drafts right now, but I never put that together. Where is he?
Well, I guess it opened. It's one guy in the way, you know.
Right. Yeah, no, I hear what you're saying now. I just never thought about it like that until you brought it up. I'm looking at a draft. I'm trying to pull up some drafts that I'm currently in, but we're not far enough to like. He hasn't like. I think we're not like at that 300 mark where he could be going. Mm-hmm. I've seen him go before 300, even before the Wendell move, which I think is too high. A lot of the really sharp people I talked to about these draft and holds last year, and I was big on Bruhunter, I was big on Duran, and they just said, nah, like, don't, not worth it. Like, they're not, I think both of the guys I was speaking to, they're like, Bruhan is like a replacement level guy in the major leagues.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting to like compare Bruhan to like Andrés Giménez. I think they both have about the same shot at like 400 plus plate appearances. Giménez might even have a better shot. And
I agree.
I like just Giménez, you know, he didn't really do anything last year, but by the time the very last main events were happening, he was going inside the top 100.
Robles too.
Right. Yeah. Robles for sure. But I mean,
he's another guy.
I feel like we have the track record more so with Robles that he's just not good. Whereas Giménez, I guess I feel like we might still be in the developmental stage with him, but you know, he's going, I think, around pick 400 or something like that, and so
Giménez.
Yeah,
I think it's moved up. I think the ADP might not be reflective.
Oh.
I think.
Oh no, I was wrong. I said that off the top of my head. Yeah, you're right. Okay. He's going.
I think it's closer to 300.
Yep.
Yeah, it's closer to 300, which makes sense. Which is like he's along with like Hampson and
well, so we have Jonathan Villar, Andrés Giménez, and Vidal Bruhan are within four picks of each other by ADP.
Giménez for me, slam dunk out of those guys.
I agree.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we are going to get to some fun in or out questions for these guys. I've got about, 20 guys who I think are very potentially polarizing, interesting to talk about. And I'm going to throw out their ADPs at John and Zach, and they'll say whether they are in or out at ADP. But first, we got to hit a quick message from our sponsors.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Owning a small business can be overwhelming. How can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy. Get Constant Contact. There's so many places to reach customers. Email, text messages, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, live events. The list goes on. How are you, as the business owner, expected to own all of those channels? That's where Constant Contact comes in to help. With Constant Contact, you'll reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and communicate more effectively to sell more, raise more, and fast-track growth. I use this to grow my email list, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
If there's one thing we appreciate here at RotoWire, it's making good decisions, and even more so, making the right decision. Listen up, folks. I have an incredible offer for you with RotoWire's newest partner, WynnBET, the premier digital casino and sportsbook app. WynnBET is now the exclusive sponsor for RotoWire's fantasy podcasts. WynnBET brings you all the latest action with a user-friendly interface, moneyline bets, boosted parlays, over-unders, round robins, live betting, and so much more at your fingertips. Want a break from sports betting? Head into WynnBET's digital casino and take a spin on roulette, double down in blackjack, slam the slots, or try your hand at baccarat. WynnBET is currently available in six states: Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia, while rapidly expanding. At WynnBET, the possibilities are limitless. WynnBET is currently offering all RotoWire listeners a risk-free bet up to $500 on your first wager. Download WynnBET now. That's WynnBET. WynnBET, the exclusive partner for RotoWire's fantasy podcast. All right, guys. So as I said before the break, I'm going to throw out some guys who I think are interesting, polarizing, guys who I'm strongly in on, guys who I'm strongly out on. And I'll get your guys' take as to whether they are solid picks at their ADP. The first guy I want to talk about is Jacob deGrom, whose ADP right now is 22. Start with you, John. Jacob deGrom, ADP 22. What do you think?
I'm out. At this moment, I am out. I need to see him actually throwing and being a little, somewhat healthy. I'm just not sure if he's there yet.
Zach?
I'm as out as Elton John. I'm Jacob deGrom. Yeah, no, I'm the same thing. Even if he is throwing in spring training, I was out last year. I've been out a while, and I just frankly don't care.
Fair enough. I think I'm out as well. That one's too bad, but the writing does sort of seem to be on the wall there. Let's go to a hitter. Cedric Mullins, ADP of 27. Someone who I didn't even have ranked in my dynasty top 400 before the season last year, if I'm not mistaken. But now his ADP is 27. Zach, Cedric Mullins at ADP 27.
I'm just normal out. I think he lacks the track record, and he really isn't a five category guy. I mean, even if you look at his schemer projections, and like I said, I'm not really I don't go hard and fast by the projections, but they're pretty optimistic. He's 25-25 with like a 260 batting average. That's not second round value. Like that's basically third or fourth round value. So you're not even you're paying a premium for him without the track record. So no.
John?
I'm out. I don't hate it, but I mean, 59 RBIs last year on 30 home runs. Like, I get it, you're a leadoff hitter for Baltimore, but so he's already extremely weak in RBIs, even with 30 home runs. I think this is going to be his last year was his career year, and I'm not going to pay for it in the second round. Too much talent there.
Do you guys think that Mullins is a guy where with each successive month, the ADP is going to like slip a little bit more, like as we get further away from last season?
I think so. I think you're right. I think there's just too many other guys in the round three and four that are going to give you something like their range of outcomes is better. Like you're basically paying for a ceiling. So I think people are going to tend to gravitate to grabbing pitchers there and waiting for, especially the outfield position. You can wait on that a little bit more easily.
All right. This guy, I think this guy is, I'm just fascinated to see where he's going in like the main event, for instance. Chris Sale currently has an ADP of 43. John, what do you think?
I'm out as well here. There's just other pitchers that are on there that I would much rather have. Giolito, Nola, Alcantara. I'd much rather have all three of those guys than Sale. So I'm probably out as of right now. If he's throwing hard in spring and everything's looking good, like he's back to being old Chris Sale, I'll reconsider. But as of right now, yeah, I probably won't have any shares till at least March.
Yeah, I'm pretty much the same reason for me. I'd be out on Sale as well at that ADP.
Are you guys surprised where his ADP is right now?
Yeah, I am. And I when we first started discussing, there's a lot of other guys that I talked to, they're smart and draft a lot, and they were talking about him as a second-round player or a first-round player. I don't know if they were screwing with me, but I think it's going to be a, I think there's going to be a high variance to for his draft cost.
Yeah, like I would not be surprised if he went like at pick 20 in a main event.
Yeah,
but yeah, I don't know. Especially if he's like looking good in the spring, because you know, if he looks like he's just back, I mean, there's a lot of people that won a lot of money on Chris Sale's back a few years ago. So Wander Franco is not someone that a lot of people won a lot of money off of yet, but currently getting drafted just inside the top 50 on average at pick 49. Zach, what do you think?
I'm out on him at that range. The main thing that I can cite about that is I want some stolen bases, and I don't know if he's going to get those. What did he have, two last year? In what, maybe around half a year? Like, no. Like John was saying, Trevor Story, no, it's a slam dunk. I'm not going to draft Wander Franco. I'd almost rather draft Bobby Witt.
That's interesting, actually. I mean, I think you'd have to be nuts to think that Franco's going to steal more bases than Witt.
Well, yeah, I don't know. Like, I've seen that stolen bases not translate, as we've all discussed. But yeah, no, I agree with you.
What about you, Jen?
Yeah, I'm out. Like Zach said, there's just not enough speed there. And like, what are his projections for home runs? I don't think he's a 30 home run guy, is he? I mean, is he like a 20 and 10?
He would have been in that group of 18 guys that I talked about, except he didn't meet the RBI run. Him and O'Neill Cruz were actually the two other guys that met the criteria, except for the runs and RBIs, because they're not projected full seasons. So he's at least a 20.
They don't have Franco for a full season?
No, I said Bobby Witt.
Oh, Witt
and O'Neill were the ones that just missed. Yeah. Franco, I don't know if he's in that category because – of the stolen bases. I'd have to check. Yeah,
he might be at like nine, like eight or nine for Steamer or something like that.
He's not, I have the list in front of me. Wander Franco's not there. He might be a little bit lower on the stolen bases. That's why, but he didn't meet this filter.
Yeah. So for me, if you're not going to get me 15 to 20 stolen bases, you better be hitting me at least 30 home runs if I'm taking you that high.
All right. This guy's probably the most, I don't know if he's even controversial anymore. I think like Adalberto Mondesi, ADP of 51. He's almost like, I think he's like one of the most boring players to talk about, but I'm bringing him up anyways. Just cause it's kind of the same thing with like Byron Buxton, where like, you know, it's just like how many games you get. And I think it's kind of, I don't know. I think I know what I'm getting. It's just how many games you're getting. But what do you think, Zach? Adalberto Mondesi at 51.
Am I in or out? I'm way out. I'm way out at 51. I'm out. But I was I'm in a draft right now with Phil DeSoto. I don't know if you've heard of him.
I have.
We're in a draft. He took Mondesi round three this year. Mm.
So. I just want to say that. Okay.
So that drive up his cost.
That reminded me of.
I'm lying.
You're lying. Okay.
I'm lying. Full disclosure. I'm lying.
I was almost. Yeah, I was sort of surprised that you were gonna reveal what Phil did.
No, I would never say anything that was real.
Trying to drive up his cost.
Yeah, I was trying to drive up his cost, and I realized I don't know if you're actually believing me or not, so I figured I got to come out with it. I'm out, so it feels good that I've told the truth now.
What if I said his ADP was 101? Would you be in or out?
Out.
Out. All right.
What round is that? That's like round six or seven.
Seven, probably.
Yeah, I'd be out.
John. I can't imagine you're gonna say you're in now.
I would be in if it was around six or seven. I would be 100% in. I would just, the thing is, if you take him, you got to make sure that you solidify third base after that, because I mean it's pretty inevitable that he's gonna miss games. So you got to make sure you have a decent backup. As far as that pick 51, I'm probably out. I usually like to get my stolen bases earlier and not have to mess around with you know the gamble of him at 51. So I would be out of 51. I did take one share of him, but I got him at 66. So I thought it was worth a gamble, but that'll probably be my only share of him as well. So
actually, one thing I will say about Mondesi, like, you know, a year or two ago, or actually basically every draft season until this draft season, I would argue that he's going to play every day when he's healthy. Because there's just nothing coming behind him. He's too good of a defender at shortstop and stuff like that. This year, I don't even think it's a lock that he plays every day when he's healthy, especially when we get to July, August, September, just because they've got a ton of guys coming. You know, he could be rocking like a 265 OBP in July, and they could be at like 500 or something. So I think there's another factor there with Mondesi that you don't even know if he's going to be an everyday guy when he is healthy, which is not something I would have said in past years. Tyler O'Neill is just one of those guys where the performance last year was just, you know, you had just immense upside in terms of power and speed, especially when you look at what he's doing with Statcast. But then the approach, the strikeout rate, the walk rate, major red flags with Tyler O'Neill, but he's going on average at pick 53 because of that power speed upside. What do you think, Zach?
I'm in for the power speed at the cost that that you're paying for. I wasn't expecting him to cost as much because of, I guess, a lack of track record, but I've sort of it's sort of become an acquired taste for me that you know, like, you sort of played the chicken and you lost chicken when you're playing these early drafts, and now I'm comfortable with him where he's going at that, in that range. But he did struggle at times, like you noted, and I did look into him very carefully, and he struggled mightily against high quality pitching. So I don't know, he probably will face it again, but most of his damage was against weaker pitching. Like, he really struggled against the Brewers and like Wheeler and etc. Alcantara, they just killed him. Like, he had a 45% strikeout rate against those guys.
That's a good little drop in some knowledge there. I like that. What about you, John?
I'm kind of neutral on him. I'm not fully in, I'm not fully out, which means I'm probably not going to get too much of him, because that's where I like to take, you know, an elite closer. That's where I'm getting Story. So I guess. For the sake of it, I'm probably out, but I don't hate it if anybody does take him there.
All right, Zach, you mentioned Austin Riley as a guy who is going quite high this year after that massive season from a year ago. He's going on average at pick 57. Are you buying, or are you out there?
I'm out on Riley, I think, despite the fact that third base is scarce. So it's hard to be out if any of them fall to you at better value. But where he's going, I think that you're really lucky. You focus on the batting average. You're like, whoa, 300 batting average with all those counting stats. But really, you're taking around four, and you really need like John's aces and bases, right? I don't know. I don't want to answer for him, but it's tough there, especially I think he had a high BABIP, and if that regresses to the mean a little bit, then really what's the difference between him and guys you can get two rounds later?
John?
I didn't realize that his ADP was that high, actually. Fourth round. I got him in the first draft we did, Zach. I think it was in round six.
I'm looking at it right now. Yeah, I think you did. I looked at that and I'm like, wow.
Yeah, I guess I didn't even realize that. Anyways, yeah, I mean, that's at the roughly the 4 or 5 turn. I could probably be in with that, just because third base is so shallow, and if you're getting them at the 4 or 5 turn, you're likely starting, or at least I'm starting, with an elite stolen base guy in that first round. So I would probably be in. I'd probably be in with him there. I'm not. I think his batting average is, as you can hit 300 again, probably not. But I think he's a safe bet for 280 plus.
Yeah, he's really good. It's. I think everyone's smart enough to know that, you know, aces and bases is kind of the way to go. And so the caliber of four category guy that you can get in like the fourth round, late fourth, early fifth, case in point, this next guy, Eloy Jimenez, who is just an absolute beast when he's healthy, although he does seem to miss a bit more time than most guys. His ADP is at 58 right now. I want to say that's about 25 spots lower than a year ago. What do you think about that one, Zach?
I'm out on him because of what he brings, his profile. I don't, like outfield, no stolen bases. Just it's got to be really, really, really good for me to take him in the fifth round. There's just other things that I like more. Like you can get guys like Tyler O'Neill sometimes falls there. I'd much rather grab somebody with the stolen bases. The batting average seems good. It's not assured, but if you'd asked me like before we started drafting, I would have thought that Eloy would have a higher ADP than Tyler O'Neill, but he doesn't. I guess people are thinking the same thing, but he's just not the profile I'm going to take around here because he's right in that closer tier where like all of the good closers sort of run out at that point, or you're looking for someone that's getting you stolen bases or like a third baseman or a second baseman. There's just so many other positions and categories you need to focus on that you can put something together that's close to Eloy, close enough to him later on that I just I can't see myself ever drafting him.
John, what do you think?
Yeah, so for me, it's kind of the same as Austin Riley. If he's going to go at that 4 or 5 turn, the way I draft, I'd likely have an elite stolen base guy in the first round, and then I probably have either an ace or an elite stolen base guy in the second round. If Starling Marte is there in the second round, I got no problem with Starling Marte and let's say, Bo Bichette or whatever, J Ram. If my stolen bases are set like that, then yeah, I'm absolutely in on them. If I get one stolen base guy and I go with, aces, second and third, it'll probably be tough. Cause like Zach said, I do like that's where I like to take my closer. So I guess it kind of depends on how my roster build is going, but yeah, I would be in. I think he's an elite four category guy.
Zach, you kind of said something that was interesting. You mentioned like, well, he's an outfielder. I actually do kind of have like a loose rule where I want all my outfielders and all my middle infielders to have the potential to steal double digit bases. And if I take an outfielder or middle infielder who isn't going to help with speed, then I have to get either a third baseman, a first baseman, or a catcher that can potentially chip in those steals. Do either you guys have any sort of thing like that with positions, or is it not as rigid as what I just laid out?
It's not as rigid, but what you're saying does make sense. I've heard Zimmerman talk about that specifically with respect to Judge, I think. Before last year, he said, I don't think I can draft. He said it'd be very difficult to draft Aaron Judge because it's hard to have your outfielders, It's hard to have an outfielder that you're going to spend that amount of draft capital on, not stealing bases. Like maybe it's okay if you're going to grab someone later on in the 200s that's not going to steal you bases. But if you're going to spend a pick on your outfielder there, yeah, you better steal you bases.
All right.
I was just gonna say, yeah, that makes sense. It's all about the draft capital for me. It's not necessarily the position, but I want stolen bases in those first 5 rounds. If I leave the first 5 rounds and I have like 20 stolen bases, it's just not gonna cut it for the way I like to draft. There's just so many good power hitters in those middle rounds that don't steal. So yeah, it makes total sense why people would be out on Aaron Judge or Eloy, Riley, those kind of guys.
I've heard people say that outfield, like they're thinking outfield's a little bit more scarce than it was last year, because a lot of people last year were saying that I can wait on the outfield, and because they waited on it in 2020 and they did in 2021. But I think this year, I just my gut from drafting 12 leagues so far is that in general, hitting is more scarce than it was last year at like in the moment where we're at right now. Just not just outfield. I think it's just everything across the board, all positions.
Yeah, when I was looking at the ADP, I did notice an outfield, and like towards the end of last season in 15 team leagues, my fifth outfield spot in like August and September was getting really tough to find good production from. And I noticed in the early ADP, I didn't really like any of the outfielders going outside of the top 300 or so. And I did like some, you know, first baseman or like second catchers, starter flyers and stuff like that. So yeah, I kind of want to get five outfielders I like while we're still inside the top 300. One guy that I'm quite high on is Jazz Chisholm. I'm very interested to sort of see how his ADP fluctuates over these next few months. It's right now it's at 77. Are either you in on Jazz Chisholm with me?
I was in a lot last year. Yeah, I had a ton of shares last year of him. This year, yeah, I got no problem again with him. I think he's got dual eligibility. He's going to be hitting at the top of the lineup. He's going to be having the green light on the bases. He's got enough power. We've seen that. So yeah, I'm in.
I haven't gotten many shares of him. I don't know if I have any shares of him yet. I'm sort of so on Jazz. And the reason is maybe I'm taking what I learned from last year, and I'm maybe a little bit too hyper focused on getting those aces and bases early, and I'm making sure I get those. So by the time the Jazz comes along, where his profile is what, a sixth round pick, you have some risk around it. That's why he's going there. I'd like him there. I'd like him there as a middle infielder. He has a position eligibility. He's sort of like the last of that group that gets you those stolen bases. Am I wrong? And I just don't want to leave myself to plan to have him, because if I miss him, there's really no net. That's my main thing with Jazz.
Yeah, I guess like maybe the net could like Tommy Edman, I think, goes right after him. So maybe that could be a fallback. But yeah, I mean, that is interesting.
Same round, I think. It's like, I think you got to pick one or the other, right? John, like, I think you've been getting a lot of Edmund, right?
Yeah, I've been taking a lot of Edmund. Again, he's dual eligibility. Like in these draft champions, dual eligibility is like king. You know, you get so many injuries, or you got a four-game week versus a two-game week. You can shuffle guys around. I mean, I had Whit Merrifield last year, and I'm pretty sure I didn't start him consecutive weeks at the same position. He was second. He was at middle infield. He was at the outfield. So, yeah, it's the dual eligibility is king, and then speed. And I think Tommy Edman showed that, and I think he's going to hit leadoff again for the Cardinals. And I think I wouldn't be surprised if he had the same kind of season, 10 home runs, 30 stolen bases.
Well, Edman was the eligibility god last year, because he had the middle, he had the corner, and he had the outfield. I haven't dug in to see who that guy might be this year. I think Edmund's down to 2B and OF, but with Jazz, my quick case for him is he's very much still a developing talent. He's in my mind, he's not that close to being a finished product, and he has modeled, he kind of wants to be the next Ronald Acuna, and I think he kind of competes with him sort of in his own head. And so like I trust him running as much as possible, and we've seen that so far in his career. So I think that the plate skills will get a little bit better this year, a little bit better the next year, and he'll kind of keep working up to 25-25, maybe 30-30.
And I'll add one other thing to that. Just kind of where he's going at the beginning of the sixth round, that means you're drafting at the end, right? And there's just not a ton of stolen base options when you're drafting at the 14-15 around the turn down there. there's just not a lot of speed options down there. You know, you can get maybe like Luis Robert, but how much is he going to run? You know, he's probably not a 30, 35 stolen base guy. Maybe he's, you know, 15, 20. So where Jazz Chisholm is going, you likely need speed at that pick of the sixth round.
All right.
I think a good comp for his upside is maybe not Acuna, but like Alfonso Soriano is a guy that I think of. Like,
oh, yeah.
The quick wrist, like that's what you're hoping, like in pie in the sky, that he's going to be, which he could.
Yeah, that's a great one. Big fall from grace for this guy. Yu Darvish, ADP of 88 right now. In or out, John?
I'm probably out. I think we've seen the best of you. I've always liked him, though, man. I've always liked him. But, yeah, I'm probably out. I likely have, you know, my top two starting pitchers there already, and yeah, I'm just looking elsewhere.
Yeah, me too. Same. That's why I don't like drafting with John. We pretty much have the same. We've had the same answer for, I think, everything. I hate drafting with you.
How many are you? Do you guys know off the top of your head how many you guys have done so far together? It's got to be like half of them.
Close.
Yeah.
I try actively to avoid John. I told him I'd join the draft, and I'm like, don't you join it.
But how about Alex Bregman? ADP of 96. Zach, what do you think about that one?
I say yeah. I don't know if I've got an even, but like it's just so hard to pass third base there. Like if you don't have a third baseman around that time, like what are you waiting for?
Yeah, that's basically the same answer for me. I don't think I have him anywhere, but I would definitely be in on him there. Third base is just so ugly. A little bit nervous about that wrist surgery, but I mean, it sounds like he should be fine for spring training, and that loaded lineup, he's going to hit in an elite spot in the batting order. So yeah, I would be in there.
All right. These next two guys are maybe my two. I think they might be like the two most fascinating guys in terms of, I think there's just going to be a lot of people who are just hard out. I think there's a lot of people who are just going to be hard in. Cody Bellinger and Christian Yelich. Cody Bellinger's ADP is 96. Christian Yelich's ADP is 106. Zach, what do you think about those two guys?
So I was at a point in one of these drafts where I had no outfielder at this point, and I needed to get my OF1, and I probably sat at my computer for about an hour looking at these two guys and saying, who am I going to like more this year? And I went in 50-50, and then I came out 100%. I'm Yelich, Team Yelich, not Team Bellinger. Here's why. So Bellinger, like people have some optimism because they saw what he did in the playoffs. I looked at this actual, I went and watched his actual hits in the playoffs. It was kind of ugly for a 360 average that he had. I think he had one home run. Like it wasn't like his hits were like bloops, and like he still wasn't hitting the ball well. They're hitting him sixth or seventh. That's telling. Yelich is the opposite. Yelich is still hitting the ball hard. Granted, he's striking out and he has the back issue, which is not good either, which is baked into his cost. And then Bellinger, if you look at him, and this might sound weird, but like he looks really skinny. Like he doesn't look good anymore. I think his body has changed. So that's my thought. And if I'm taking someone there, it's going to be Yelich.
What do you think, John?
Yeah, I'm probably out on both. I mean, I could definitely understand why people want to take them because we've seen the ceiling that they both can provide. But I'm likely just, I don't even want to mess around with it. I've been burned too many times, especially by Yelich.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm probably more in on probably both than you guys are. And it's like, I'll just cop to the fact that certainly in Bellinger's case, but kind of in Yelich's case as well, it's kind of a blind leap of faith in these guys kind of just having a hell of an off season. I mean, maybe they're not, maybe Bellinger's just not wired that way. And maybe he doesn't care that much, or maybe he doesn't know how to kind of address what's wrong with him. But these sort of elite talents who are still kind of in this age range, I feel like you're getting such a discount, and it's a pick that you can afford to take you could take a zero on your seventh or eighth round pick and win your league easy. I mean, I've taken a zero on like my third round pick and won my league easy. It's not something you should maybe set out to do, but I can't get over the cost on those two. Maybe that opinion will evolve as we get further into the off season.
Yeah definitely worth the risk. I think, like you were saying, like for me, just the way I dropped, I get so many stolen bases early on that I target a guy like Jesse Winker or on that ADP that those guys are going. I think he's got a elite four category upside. And as long as my stolen bases are taken care of, then I don't really need the speed from the other two. So take the who I think is a safer pick in Jesse Winker.
Are either of you in on Dalton Varsho at pick 106 on average?
Yeah, I could be in on him there. As long as he's playing somewhat regularly ish in the outfield, then he's gonna get you. He might get you 20 and 8. I think people saw the 20 stolen bases in the minors or whatever. I don't think that's it. I think he's gonna get you 20 stolen bases. I don't think that's gonna happen, but I think he's still gonna do well enough there that he's worth that cost, as long as he just doesn't get sent down. Really, he's pretty safe in that matter.
Yeah, I'm probably out. I understand why people are in, but yeah, I mean, if he plays every day, sure, okay, I got no problem with it, because he's going to get you speed at a position that gets basically no speed. But yeah, there's just too many other big players there. You know, you got, yeah, you know, guys like Pablo Lopez are on there. I already mentioned Jesse Winker, like Brian Reynolds. Mm-hmm. So I'd rather go elsewhere there than
I know it's catcher, but like just you like Christian Yelich and Dalton Varsho have the same ADP. Like I don't know. I it's
yeah, just, that is crazy that you say that.
Like yeah. I know one of those guys is gonna play every single day when he's healthy, and the other guy is like a guy who's not a good defensive catcher, but just kind of, you know, he's kind of a weird utility guy that I don't know. I think maybe he gets to, you know, if he gets to 400 plate appearances, it's probably not a bad pick. But yeah, it's just I thought Varsho, like I thought it was going to be like a 150, 160 ADP type of thing on him. Yeah, he's just already just everyone's
that ADP, and I'm ABD, always be drafting, so you could sort of feel the ADP move, and that ADP seems even like high for what he's actually going. I've seen him go in the fifth and sixth round quite frequently.
Wow.
So like sixth round, like that's, I think that's what you're going to see. Like, I think when we first started, he went in the seventh. I've seen the sixth a bunch of times. So I think that's like, just obviously, like there's a good portion of drafts that are like going on as we speak. Like I'm in two right now. You're like, there's 15 drafts that have been factored to that ADP. I think I'm in two. John, you're in how many that are going on right now? How many DCs? One or two?
I'm just in one right now that's going on.
So there's three right now. That's going to tack on another 3 out of 15. That's another 20% to that ADP. So I think that's probably going to go up even. Not that I'm not saying I agree with it, but I think it's going to move up.
Anthony Rendon, ADP of 114. Either of you guys in there?
I'm not, but again, just because we haven't seen him for, you know, he's been hurt. If he's raking in spring, that's going to skyrocket way up with how shallow third base is. But yeah, as of right now, I don't have any shares. I'm just not in right now.
I'm in on him, sort of for the same reason I'm in on those other third basemen, because I don't want to get shut out of third base past him. Like, this is sort of like, this is like, okay, what's going to happen after Bregman? This is what's going to happen after Bregman. And I'm not really looking at the players, not super comfortable with any of them after that as like sort of a higher end option. And I think he's going to, if he's healthy, he's going to hit for a good average, and he's going to hit for some good power. He's on a good team. So I think everything's baked into where you're going to take him there. And I've never been a Rendon guy in these drafts, but this year I can see it.
We keep mentioning third base. The top third baseman by ADP is Jose Ramirez at roughly sixth, and then you have Devers at 20, Machado at 27, and then there's a big drop off to Mondesi and Riley in the 50s, Arenado in 75, Chris Bryant 90. So you get the picture. Have either of you guys like taken Jose Ramirez in the first round over guys that you might prefer, like just in a vacuum, just to get third base taken care of?
I've had Jose Ramirez slip to me at pick 7, so that's like an auto pick for me. Yeah. I would take Jose Ramirez as high as second.
Wow. Question. Yeah, I've taken him in the first round as well, and not for those reasons, but that's a good question, James. I'm in one right now where I had the 5th pick and I took Bichette, and it wrapped all the way back around, and the guy after me took Ramirez. It wrapped back around, and Ozzie Albies fell to whatever that pick was in the second round, which is his max pick. And then I'm waiting for, it was Brian Slack that was picking before me, and he had the 6th pick, and I'm giving away a little bit, and I don't want to give away too much, but basically I kind of wished I took the Ramirez 6th pick rather than Bichette 5th pick, just to get that extra pick in that second round. I sort of already said too much, but what happened, but it's sort of like, I'd rather have the Ramirez pick there. Like I'd rather set my KDS to get the Ramirez pick because he is falling to that 6 or 7 spot sometimes. So yeah, like you said, it's a smash pick. I've never taken him over like Bichette, but now I'm starting to think maybe I should.
Well, Brian Slack, he is a friend of the show, so hopefully he won't mind that you.
I don't think I gave away too much, but I sort of.
Yeah. We mentioned Verlander earlier in the show, but JV, ADP of 142, probably another guy where the more people see him pitching in the spring, the higher his cost is going to soar. What do you guys think about the price right now?
John?
I'm out until I see more. I need to see more. So as of right now, I'm out. But yeah, he's, like you said, he's another one. If he's throwing well in the spring and looking good and looking back to his old self, he's going to skyrocket. So it's very likely I'm not going to get any shares of him. So it is what it is.
Yeah. I wish I got some shares of him when he was going a bit later, but I kind of feel like I was asleep at the wheel in these early drafts where I could have got that value. Now he's going up, and like we talked about the steamer projections, like I'm probably out too because of what you said, John, same reasons.
So I haven't put my money where my mouth is at all. But I theoretically am really in on Verlander at this at 142, but it sounds like he's going to be going even higher than that. And this is kind of a gut call. Shout out to Vlad Sedler, but he just sort of, Verlander has that kind of Roger Clemens, Tom Brady kind of vibe to me, where I think he's just like going to be one of these super weird guys who stands upright much longer than he should on the mound. But we'll see. And then
I want to see how fast he's throwing.
Well, and the other thing, it's, you know, a lot of times, like I make fun of people that take these big injury risk guys, you know, in like the 4th round or something like that. But I mean, you're getting him, like the pitchers that go around like pick 140, like they've all got issues. Like it's not like a slam dunk safer options at that stage of the draft either.
Verlander just went at pick 76 in my draft. So,
wow,
it's already going way up.
Didn't George say that maybe he didn't tell you guys, but I think he said he went in like the second round in one of his drafts.
Yeah. Somebody auto.
Yeah.
I was not. Oh, okay. So that's going to affect the ADP.
Yeah, it will. Yep.
Another, you know, former ace who's working his way back from TJ, actually got on a mound towards the end of last year. Luis Severino, pick 145. Either you guys in on him?
No, I'm out on him.
No, I'm out, but I do like that he did pitch a little bit last year, so we could actually see him, and he threw okay. So I'm probably still out just because I don't know how many innings these guys are going to throw coming off these major injuries. So
that's not really my thing's not the injury. It's more like I don't know for sure how they're going to use him next year. Like Yankees are pretty conservatively normal with the rotation, but who do they got? They got Cole Montgomery, Nestor Cortez, and Herman. Yeah, but I don't know. They could add someone. I don't know. Like, I'm just not sure what I'd like to see. I'd like to see it mapped out. And I don't know. I'd like to see him start some games. I don't know how he's going to hold up. Like, he's got a long injury history, even before that, TJ. So I don't know. Like, I think he's a pretty big, he's one of the bigger injury risks, in my opinion. Maybe it's just my gut saying that. Like, for him to be, like, he's close to Verlander. That's not even close. Like, I'd way, way rather have Verlander.
Yeah, no, I think I would, too. I'll be interested to see if Severino's kind of hovers around there. Have you guys, like, you know, I think last year, last draft season, I was probably more cautious than I had ever been before when it came to pitcher injuries, pitcher workload concerns, that type of thing. Did anything in terms of last year change how you guys sort of view not necessarily the injury aspect of things, but say, you know, projecting a pitcher to throw like 145 innings and that sort of being a reason to be out on him? Is that something that's sort of changed for you with the way that, you know, guys like Corbin Burns threw, or is that just kind of a process over results type of thing?
I don't think I'm going to change anything in terms of how I dealt with it. Like, for me, I was out on DeGrom last year, and it was the wrong call, even though he was like pitched half the season. But it was everyone knows what happened there. But I think like I think it has to be a binary decision. So it's like that injury could have happened in April, and then you'd be right to fade him. So just because DeGrom pitched half the season, and then people say, oh well, he's a second round pitcher if he pitches half a season. Guess what? Like, that half a season is sort of irrelevant to your decision making. You can't just arbitrarily assign 80 games to an injury risk. It's either he gets injured or he doesn't. And when he gets injured is really like luck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For me, it's kind of the same thing. I'm not going to really change too much from last year. I generally am always very hesitant with pitchers that are coming off injuries and that didn't pitch at all or, you know, pitched like a half a season. So nothing will change on that front. As far as like the innings pitched, like, yeah, Corbin Burns, I only had one or two shares last year. I was in 37 leagues. So, and it wasn't a complete avoid, obviously, because I did grab a share or two, but I went elsewhere a lot of the time just because I was a little wary of the innings he was going to throw. So, on the innings front, I'll change my thought process a little bit.
Well, and the Burns example is just such a rare case where like a guy that good, you know, I mean, it that's not going to come around every year. Adam Wainwright, was a league winner last year. Was going outside the top 300, if I'm not mistaken. Kind of faded a little bit down the stretch, going at pick 167 right now. What do you think about that, Zach?
I'm out. He's too old. So I'll just be blunt. Like I know he was great. He's been great for 2 years, but like all good things come to an end, and it's not just that. It's just what else you can get around that. So it's I recognize that like what I'm saying is sort of short-sighted, but at the same time, that downside along with a similar upside and more with like a lot of those pitchers going in that same ADP, like I could list a couple, right? But there's just other ones I like there that are maybe don't have the same floor, but like their range of outcomes to me is the same. And you just don't want to be holding the hot potato.
Yeah, I'm probably out as well, just for the kind of the same reasons. Not the exact same reasons, but the same reasons as far as there's other players around there that I really like. So I'm definitely I'm out on him because of that reason. I do think that he's going to be just fine though. Like, he doesn't rely on you know, throwing high 90s, you know. So I think he'll be a fine value there. I would just rather go elsewhere with the other options around that ADP.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like if he was 75 picks after that, I'd be in.
But just, it's kind of, you know, I mean, it's kind of one of those, like, the guy that you got for a huge value the year before, rather than kind of buy him at sort of peak value after that year, just go try to find a guy that's sort of going in that 300 range that people have kind of forgotten about and try to find the next year's. You're not going to find a guy who pitches quite as well as Wainwright did last year, but you are definitely sort of paying for a monster year from a 39-year-old. And then the last guy, Gavin Lux, ADP of 213. What say you, John?
I'm in. I think that's going to climb quite a bit as well, actually. With Corey Seager officially being gone, opens up another spot. They did re-sign Chris Taylor, but I think, I think he's going to get the opportunity to play every day, and I'm definitely in.
Zach?
Well, his steamer projections are pretty bad, especially the playing time. And he's already shown that he could perform poorly, which he has. But I'm in. I think where he's going, given the eye test and the pedigree that he showed in the minor leagues, and the potential for speed, and he has such great plate discipline. Like, there's all the ingredients are there for him to just break out at that spot. And where you're paying there is, like, it's a perfect spot to take a leap of faith right there. What is it, 213 right there? And I agree with John. So, yeah, no, John, I hate drafting with you. I don't want to draft with you. So I think did we agree on everything?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, he's a power speed combo. You're not having to break the bank to pay for him. Like, it's a loaded lineup. You could easily see him having a breakout season.
Muncy's hurt. Did we mention that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Muncy's going to be a guy where the ADP really takes a turn here over the next month or so, because he was getting drafted inside the top. I mean, that, like, Muncy and Buster Posey were the two examples that I thought of, like, off the top of my head, of just, like, guys that, like, if you were in one of those super early drafts, like, I might have liked both those guys before Posey retired and Muncy revealed he had a torn UCL. All right, guys. Well, this was a ton of fun. Zach, why don't you tell people about the podcast that you host?
I do the Draft Champions podcast, and right now we're just basically talking to people that play in the higher stakes leagues and people that have been very successful, along with other people that may not have been successful this year, but have in the past and know a lot and have a lot of experience. So we're just trying to get better and talk to our friends.
And John, I mean, you're just kind of drafting all the time.
Yep.
Don't think you have anything to plug, really.
Nope.
But do you guys want to both let everyone know where they can find you on Twitter?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Pile of Dial. Or in the draft room. I'll be there.
And if you tweet at John, like, if you're in a room and you're waiting for it to fill and you're just getting that itch, just tell John there's an opening, and he'll send that hopping in a car gif, and you'll be rolling.
Yep. Absolutely.
Zach, anything else you need to plug?
No, I'd rather not tell people where they can find me, but just plug other great people in the baseball community. And I always just plug the Baseball Prospectus. They're doing great work. So whenever I get a chance to shout them out, I always shout out Baseball Prospectus.
Awesome. Well, really appreciate this, guys. This was the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast brought to you by WinBet, and I'll be back next week.